Okay, I'd like to do a transition into talking about the friends that you've had, and I think it's real interesting that you've had the same friends for quite a long time, and I'd like you to talk about how that happens and if there have been difficulties with that. You were talking about you and Delilah.
Yeah. Well, I have this one friend who we even went to grammar school together. Mm-hmm. And in high school, when they found out that I liked girls, I lost all the people around, that were around me, that were even real close friends, because they were all of a sudden afraid. But Delilah, she stuck with me. And we got close after that, really close, because she was the only one that would talk to me at school. This was at an all-girls school, you know.
And where'd you go?
Annunciation.
Oh.
This was my junior year.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had to transfer because the principal sort of hinted that I had to leave. So I transferred to Grover.
Sort of hinted?
That I had to leave, yeah. Oh, yeah, she pulled me out of Glee Club and told me that she could have me in Bishop O'Hearn by Monday with my kind of people. Which I knew what she meant, because in Bishop O'Hearn I had heard other lesbians, and all this stuff was new to me, because I still hadn't had an experience with a woman. It was just that, like, I guess when someone I was in awe, you know, with someone would walk by, and this one girl, Michelle Minucci, she starts telling everybody that I was a lesbian, and
you went to high school with Michelle?
Yeah.
Oh,
thank God. She spread the rumor that I was a lesbian, and everyone turned against me. And I didn't even know why until, you know, Delilah told me that that was what had happened. So I transferred over to Grover. And Delilah and I, we've been friends since. We don't see each other too much. We don't, and yet we go through, like, I haven't seen her maybe in a couple of months yet. We go through periods where we see each other maybe twice a week, and what?
Is she gay or something?
Yeah. Oh yeah. All that affected me. God, I was mad because I loved her like a sister, and that was not something that I wanted for, you know, my sister or my brother.
And oh, so you felt that even though you felt this way yourself, it probably wasn't a good way for people.
Yeah.
To
well, I had been out already a year.
Uh huh.
And from just that one year, I had been exposed to so much that I had never seen in my 18 years. And some of it was rather ugly, that I didn't know that I couldn't explain why it happened that way, or how come it happened that way to me or to anyone else. And I didn't think that that was any kind of life for anyone to lead, even for myself. I go through these real mind trips where I felt that I shouldn't be like that, that I should, you know, it was like a habit, I could break it, you know.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever try?
Did I ever try to
to break the habit?
No.
No. I like the look on your face when you said that. No.
Well, because I'm thinking of I'm thinking about now that even though I haven't been with anyone in a long time, it's because I choose to, because I'm not ready. I have to get a lot of composure, right? But even with all that doesn't mean that I don't have feelings, like I'm not stirred when so. Like this is, like, in a lot of ways, this is my way of trying to break a habit of something, my past.
Uh-huh.
So I keep away, but that doesn't mean I don't want to want that. Instead, I just want to be stronger next time.
Oh, I see. Right. Okay, but in all the time that you were thinking about how bad lesbianism might be for people, you didn't experiment with heterosexuality.
Oh, yeah. No, I would. I have.
Uh-huh.
I never liked it. I had been raped when I was a kid, so I never liked it. I was molested when I was 5. I was molested when I was 9, and even by my father's cousin. So, no, I was awfully uncomfortable with a man. Very, I mean, even with my father, when I was a little girl, we would dance. He would, you know, try to show me how to dance a bolero, which is a slow number. I would be very tense, and I remember him saying that to me. You know, what's the matter? Are you afraid of me? I'm your father, you know? And I was like 13.
Yeah.
And I was just really tense because I was afraid of what he might do. And he was my father. So I would try and have a boyfriend, you know. They were usually around my own age. And probably like a close friend. that I would say, look, I want to go to bed with a guy. I mean, I want to be with a man, you know, which is spend the night with me. And we would go to bed, and it'd be a flop, because it'd be a flop on my part, maybe not on his part, because he'd be trying to please me, and there was nothing that he had that I wanted, you know. There was nothing he had that could please me. Mm-hmm. So I stopped trying. You know, I knew that that's not something you try at, to try to change. That's something that, you know, if it's going to happen, it happens because you want it and mm-hmm. not forced. And I was constantly forcing the feeling that maybe if I tried it one day, zap, you know, I'll like it and I could change. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't happen that way.
So let's go back and talk about your relationship with your best friend and her becoming gay and how that affected you.
Yeah, she lived with her father. He's a rapist, and he was strict. He was strict like my mother, and like my mother's father. And he didn't let her go out at all. And so when I came out, because we were friends, and she couldn't go out or anything like that, I used to go visit her with my lover. And it was funny because Papa used to think that Bobby was a boy. You know, for a long time he thought
Pablo is her father.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Well, I'm doing this for the time. I'm not the only one who's going to, you know, I know who Papa is. Okay.
So he thought that she was a boy for a while. Anyway, we brought over, she came out with a friend of ours, Judy. And we happened to bring her over, and somehow she invited Delilah to a Miri picnic. And Delilah wanted to go, so she ended up going and ended up coming back real late. And Papa didn't let her in the house at all. He sort of told her that was it. He didn't want her in the house at all. So she had no other choice but to stay with Judy. And somehow it ended up that way. She stayed with Judy, and that was where she was for so many years.
Uh-huh.
Seven, I think.
She never went back home again.
Yeah, no, she never did.
Uh-huh.
And when I found out about that's where Delilah was, I went to visit her, and I was mad. I was mad at Judy for doing it, because I felt that it was wrong. I felt like she had taken. Delilah always represented to me like a sweet virgin who knew no better, and so I felt that Bobby sort of disturbed that for her, and you know, disrupt. I mean, not Bobby, Judy, disrupted that world, and because she couldn't go back home, she had no other place but to stay there, and kind of grew to love Judy. You know, I don't think she loved Judy right away. I think she grew to love her, mm-hmm. and. But I felt angry. I felt angry. But there was nothing I could do. I just sort of, I expressed the feeling that she was better off at home and better off with someone not of our kind. I mean, I even put myself in that place. That I didn't want her to be with anyone like my kind.
Yeah.
That I would rather see her married and with kids. And she just laughed. And she told me, but you know, how can you say that life is no good if you're like that, you know, this life for me. So, but we became close, so we became much closer after that.
Mm-hmm.
A lot closer. As far as other friends, I've known a lot of people, and I've lived with a few roommates that I thought were friends, but that went wrong somewhere along the line. Something went wrong, and we ended up not being friends. You know.
Mm-hmm.
One girl tried to commit suicide, and that was it. So did the guy too. Now that I think about it.
You mean the man that you were seeing?
I had a couple of roommates. And
I see.
They both of them, in the same period of time that I was living there, both of them tried to commit suicide, and I found them both, and that did something to me. I ran for a while from people. I've had the few friends that I have now. They're good. They're solid. They've been solid for you know, for as long as I've known them. And I appreciate that, because at this time I feel kind of, I feel not lost, but feel like for the first time I'm doing something for myself, you know, like strength, for not only for strength, but also for to straighten up the mess that I've made all these years, you know, because instead of fixing what I've done wrong, you know, I've sort of run, and not taken time to evaluate some things that have happened where I should have taken time and just jumped into another situation and sort of blocked that out, and you know, you could only do that so much.
Mm-hmm. It sounds to me like you feel that if not all, at least most of what went wrong was your fault, the mess that I've made, what I've done wrong.
Well, because I realize now that, well, it's not that I've done wrong. I mean, certain situations that I found myself in, by no means I had control over. They mm-hmm. just happened. But it's that, and it's not that it's been my fault either. It's that I put myself there. Somehow I let myself go that far without thinking twice that it was wrong for me, or, you know, wrong for the environment I was in. And no, it's not my fault. Some of it was not my fault. Mm-hmm. I was just, you know, it's really funny, but I didn't know any better. You know, there were a lot of times I just didn't know any better, and I'm the kind that's easily influenced and very gullible. You know, even now I think I'm gullible. So I just took people for what, you know, like they were all, like they would never lie to me, they would never cheat me, they would never, you know, and I've been really fucked over because of that.
But you don't feel that that's happened with your friends, you're like your close, your really close friends.
No, not with the people that I... Oh, you have disagreements, they're usually about, but not feel like they put something over me, no.
I'm kind of interested in hearing a little bit, if you would talk about your relationship with Iris, because it seems like you have since, you were lovers for a certain length of time, and you have since become very close friends, and also because Iris, was she born in Cuba?
No, she was born in the States.
Uh-huh.
I think she was born in Florida, and...
But she was raised in a Cuban-American community?
Yeah, she was born in New York.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I think she did tell me that once.
She was raised in New York. Uh-huh. You know, Iris, well, we were close. I had known Iris beforehand, and I went to New York to visit her. And for some reason, I wanted her to come back with me, because I wanted her to be my lover. I remember telling her that I didn't love her, but that she was the kind of woman that I'd grow to love, and that's what happened. You know, I wasn't in love with her, but I loved her because she was so good. She was so good. I mean, she was the kind of woman that always thought of herself last. You know. And not that I respect that in her, just that I had never had anyone like that who really wanted to please me. So, and so we became friends. We were very good friends in the relationship, and we're even better friends out of the relationship. I mean, we're still attached in some way. As a matter of fact, I got her to take dance with me now, because she gained a lot of weight. So I kept telling her that that's good for her and for her mind, because she's not doing anything. So I got her, so she spends Mondays and Wednesdays with me, and she's here all day. And sometimes I find myself thinking, while not reminiscing about the past, but just feeling all of a sudden like this time was elsewhere, you know, like we lived this before. And I almost feel... There are times when I almost feel that she's my lover, and I feel kind of funny because I know she's not, and we're like sisters now. This, you know, we're like sisters, because what it was is that basically our values never clashed. you know. And we were pretty much raised the same way. We had the same language. We liked the same things. We liked the same kind of music, you know. We moved, when we danced, we moved the same. And it was good. It was really good. Our religion was the same. We even felt the same about people. We were even the same signs, you know, so. we were like sisters even in our relationship now that I, because I respected her a lot. She's a good woman.
You think that a lot of what made you feel so comfortable was your similar backgrounds?
With Iris? Well, somewhat. A lot of it had to do, too, that for the first time, I knew that what we had wasn't going to be uprooted by some kind of affair. I knew that she wouldn't, for some reason, I knew that she was going to be faithful, and I knew that I was going to be faithful to her. And that's how it was. I never felt threatened by anyone with her. I was very comfortable with the fact that she can go out with anyone, and I never felt funny about it. And she didn't stop me as far as people, you know. We didn't, but of course in those days, that's when I used to have those bad seizures, so they were always around me too. They were always afraid that I'd get hurt. So maybe that too. She sort of protected me in that sense.
Uh-huh.
She watched what I did.
Oh, I see. Yeah, no, I had completely forgotten about that. You were having, was that about the worst time in your life physically?
For having
seizures?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And is that controlled now with medication?
Well, I've been off the medication, it'll be a year now.
Oh,
I haven't had. I got off on the medication because I hadn't had one in over a year, and I just knew that if I didn't get off the medication then I probably would have never gotten off because the doctor never wanted me to get off. And I just knew it was time because I was ready. I was ready to get off the pills. I had been ready. I didn't like what, they used to always have me depressed, you know. And I was doing a lot of reading. I had read too that the amount I was taking, that sometimes makes you have them even more. And sort of, it causes such an imbalance, you just keep having them, you know? And I think that's what was happening to me.
Mm-hmm.
Such a high dosage and just, you know, all that energy running. It was just, so I gradually got off them. And I've never been back to the doctor since.
What were you taking?
Dilantin, phenobarb.
Yeah, that's standard for epilepsy. Uh-huh.
I've learned to control. Like, you can control. I took a silver mind control course for Catholic Charities.
Really?
And they had suggested it for, like, epileptics and whatnot. So I went, and I remember taking that, and never paid any attention to why I was doing it, you know, why I was going. But this year, I started, well, somewhat like learning how to relax, learning. I think it also comes, too, from taking up dance, where you learn to discipline, where you learn to focus on one thing. So I learned to control. You get signs, like sometimes when you know you're going to have one, your ears ring. And so I've learned to control my energies, because all it is just like a rush. And if you don't know how to stop, you just go under.
Yeah.
At least that's what happens. But I've learned to slow down. Or if I have to go real fast, just work it out.
Uh-huh.
You know, in the back room.
Yeah, yeah. That's great that you've been able to control it. It's really amazing.
I went through a lot of changes when I went off the medication, though. It seemed like a fight, you know. It was really a fight with, like, my body and my mind. It was hard because what it was is I felt like a junkie. There were days when I didn't take the medication, and I would feel real blue, so blue, and yet I never thought it was the medication. But one day I stayed away for like a month, and I noticed the change. You know, you would get so depressed, and then some days you'd be racy, and or you'd be cold, or you know, you'd feel hot or something. So I just knew that somehow they were like addicting or whatever. So I wanted to get off them. I didn't like what they were doing to my gums, so I would keep getting prescriptions, but not buy them. No, not buy them. Just yeah. So for the doctor's sake, because he didn't want me to get off at all. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, I'm glad you're feeling better now. Going back to the relationship you had with Iris, I'm kind of especially interested in that with regard to the things that you said about feeling the same and liking the same kind of music, and you spoke the same kind of language, and I guess the question that I have is, what is it like for a woman who has been raised in a community like the Puerto Rican community that has some very rigid rules and is very family oriented and clannish, and you know, like a lot of communities are, to try and relate in relationships to women who are not part of that community?
Well, I think that's why I always wanted to meet another Puerto Rican gay woman. I wanted to see what they were all about. You know, it was like someone strange, because as far as I knew, there was never anyone around. You know, and I had been out a few years and gone out to the bars and never met a Puerto Rican woman. So Iris, it was like, I didn't feel funny about if I went home with her, because I knew she spoke, and so there was no need for translating or even for feeling like she was left out, because she still had part of the culture, you know. Another thing is that there's like a lot of emphasis on parents. Well, even when you're grown up and you're married, you may have kids, there's a lot of emphasis on respect for parents, you know, like your mother and father. And she had that. You know. She would ask for her father's blessing, and you know, say, you know, he would give her the blessing, and it was. And Lydia too. Lydia lived with us. She was Puerto Rican, but she was a little bit different. She sort of denies the fact that she's Puerto Rican. I don't know why. She always thought that they were hypocrites. But it was like living with those, because I lived with Iris and Lydia at the time. It was close. It was sometimes too close. Because there were days, I guess, if I were to really think about it, where I forget who was my lover, Lydia or Iris, because it was they were both close, and yet one was closer than the other. She was a couple years younger than I was, and yet much more mature. You know, she was raised in such a way that she had a lot of responsibilities at a real young age, so that you learn to handle yourself, I guess, more like an adult. And even though she was 19, she was a lot older than I was, emotionally and mentally. And I think that came from the way she was brought up, the way her father and her mother raised her, you know, mm-hmm. to think for herself, but yet to depend on them. So that, and she left it home at a good age. You know, she left home with her parents' blessing, and there was no feeling like you can't leave.
When you started functioning in the gay community, like going out to bars and things, did you feel different because you were Puerto Rican?
No, I used to feel different because I never looked at it as feeling different because I was Puerto Rican. I always felt different because there were a lot of things that I knew I would never do. Like, in those days, I didn't swear. I wouldn't say fuck. Mm-hmm. And so, whenever I used to hear some, or say a dirty joke, you know. Mm-hmm. So, it was, in that respect, that's how I felt different, because they were things that I wouldn't do, that I was brought up not to do, because they were unladylike, and they weren't even nice for a man to do, you know. In that respect, I felt different. Not so much because I was Puerto Rican.
Uh-huh. Tell me something about the way you saw the bars when you first started going to them. You said it was Bobby Bailey who started taking you to your first bars. Oh, I thought you said it was Bobby Bailey.
No,
she was your friend and she was dragging you out to bars.
Yeah, to the bars. And
right.
The first time that I went to a gay bar was with Priebus.
Uh-huh.
And she had told me that we were going to go out to the bars. I think it was for a Halloween party.
Uh-huh.
And I remember falling asleep that night. We were staying on Elmwood. We were sleeping up in Dottie's attic.
Uh-huh.
And waking up screaming and asking her not to take me because I had dreamt that, you know, the people that went to those places were nothing but monsters, and they were ugly, and that they were gonna do me harm. And she just laughed it off. Well, we went to the party.
But it was in master costumes.
There were women. I thought they were women. I thought they were these women done up elaborately. And I was just looking. I was thinking, oh my God, how beautiful. And but they turned out to be men in drag. And I just couldn't understand how a man could go through such changes and look like that. That was new. That was,
uh-huh.
I didn't understand that. I still don't understand that. How they could look so masculine and then the next minute looks so much like a lady. So fine, so soft.
What about the women at the bars? How did they strike you? What bar did you go to?
The first bar?
Yeah.
Crescendo's.
Uh-huh.
Crescendo's. Then I went to the bar. Even with my going to the bar a lot, I talked to a few, but I noticed that there were a lot of cliques, different cliques. And some cliques you were even afraid to, you know, go near, I mean, to bother to talk, because they look like they couldn't be touched, or they look uppity, you know.
Uppity, uh-huh.
They look uppity, and I never...
Did you ever find out, like, who they were, and what was it about them that made them look that way or act that way?
No. I guess it had to do with just the way they thought of themselves, you know, that they were too good to be bothered with some people.
How did that make you feel? Do you think they were just silly, or?
No, I didn't, no.
Did you feel put down?
No, I didn't really feel put down, but there were times that I would feel inferior, because especially if I was alone in the bar, and even though you wanted someone to talk to, you knew that there was no way that they would ever be your friend, because you're not the kind of person that looks like their group, you know?
What they look like?
Just people. Just women.
How could you tell that they were...
Well, they were real snobs. They were real snobs, because, for instance, if you ran into them into the bathroom, you could just tell. They would have this air about them that they didn't want to be bothered by you. They didn't want to know you.
Yeah.
So I would just sort of stay at a distance then.
Did they dress like the other women, or better, or?
Well, yeah, they would dress better. They were, you know, they were cleaner, coordinated.
Uh-huh.
But, no, I never made it a point, and you know, I never went out of my way to know those people, because I felt that if that's how they were, then there was nothing that they had that I wanted, because that wasn't the kind of image that I wanted to portray to anyone, even if I was, you know, better. There's no way I wanted to give someone the impression that I was, untouchable, that I couldn't be talked to.
Uh-huh. Did you ever meet women at the bar, or see women at the bar that you felt were like the opposite of that, like low life, or, you know, I don't really have a good word for it, but
there were a few mm-hmm. women that I remember looking and thinking that it seemed like their life was written all over them, you know, that their life was somewhat cheap.
Uh-huh.
It looked like they did a lot of drugs. There were a few that were always stoned, or and they looked like they were doing hard stuff and would stumble. They would speak, you know, with a lot of foul words in between. You know.
Mm-hmm.
With those people, I was never afraid, because even though they were kind of loud, I knew that, you know, they would never hurt me in any way, you know, be it physical or even with words, because they were, that's...
Did you ever get to talk to people like that?
Yeah.
Did they turn out to be the kind of people that they appeared to be?
Well, some of them did. Others were, no, they weren't like that.
Uh-huh.
And some, it was just phases that they were going through.
Yeah.
Not.
But the snobby ones stayed snobby, and you never...
Yeah, there, you know, as a matter of fact, when I was in the bar a couple weeks ago, there were a couple women that I remember from the past that they still weren't like that. Like, they were sitting in a corner, and when I walked in, right away they looked like, you know, what are you doing here? And just, you could get, you, I got the sense that if I even tried to say hello to them, that they wouldn't have bothered. Because
uh-huh.
I sort of nodded and I got no response.
Uh-huh. But they did see you, and, I mean, they recognized your existence,
yeah.
By, you know, you could tell they knew you were there.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So they're... Their actions were deliberate, whatever they did. Yeah. Uh-huh. Do you think that the bars have changed very much since you started going to them? The looks of the bars, the way people act in them?
No.
Uh-huh.
Well, from me now, this is... I don't think the people haven't exactly changed. I think the music has changed. I mean, now it's disco. The people themselves, I don't think they really change. I mean, they just get younger. I mean, and a new crowd moves in. But the same thing seems like it's constantly going on, you know.
If the crowd gets younger, where do the older ones go?
I don't know.
You're looking. So where do I don't go out. I stay home and do tape recordings. So
once in a while you see a few of the older women. I remember about a month ago, I was in Maine, Alice's, and I saw an old lady that I thought would never show up in a place like that. You know, she owned the barn. I mean, yeah, no, but that wasn't like her to be walking in Maine, Alice's, you know.
But she owns the barn.
Rosie.
Oh, Rosie. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But she was there.
Do you think that people still, well, I don't know.
I think, you know, the younger ones, okay, for instance, like when I go out, there was a point in my life, I remember going out to sort of like cruise, you know, I guess they call it cruising.
Right.
I would go out to like see who's new and maybe I could find someone. But now I know when I go out, I don't go out for that purpose. I go out maybe to dance or to enjoy myself with the friends. Not so much to look for a partner or even, you know, to look for a new friend, because those sometimes that's a hard place to meet friends. I mean, you can meet people.
Yeah.
But the personal life is their business, you see. At least I find with the older people, I don't know, the younger crowd, it's not so much like that. They're freer. They'll let you know, you know, where they live, maybe what they do. Mm-hmm. Older people don't do that too much. You get more reserved the older you get. You want to not so much hide, but you know that it's not to be spread around, I guess. Yeah. You lay low.
Do you still see the same kind of like cruising or flirtation or whatever going on with the younger people?
With the men, yeah.
With the men? Yeah. What about with the women?
Well, I was only once at the bar. Let's see. Why?
Well, like maybe a couple of years ago before the last relationship.
Oh. Yeah.
It stays pretty constant. It seems to be a good place to meet somebody to what? Go home with, sleep with.
It's one of the places. Okay. I can't say it's always, but it seems like that's what they do. Okay. I mean, that's what I did when I was younger.
What other places are there? Through friends, parties?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Tell me something about the Erie Picnic. You're one of the few people that has mentioned the Erie Picnics. I don't know whether other people have forgotten them or what, but what is that all about?
Oh, God. They were big picnics. I think the last one was when I was 19, 20. And at that point, at the last one, there were, I think, 2,000 people or over 2,000. I don't remember where they were because I know that they were in Erie, Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly where I didn't do the driving, but the first one that I went to, I thought to myself, "Oh my God!" I mean, I felt like I was in heaven or something with all those people, both male and female, that were like me, that and so free, and yet, you know, doing things that normal people would be doing, playing ball, you know, water balloons, you know, the running. The A contest. They were doing things that, you know, another parks, you know, straight people would be doing, and yet they were gay. You know, I mean, that was something I never thought I would see. You know, such a large crowd like that.
Who started that kind of thing? I mean, who people don't all show up on the same day at the same place unless somebody organizes it? Who did it?
I don't know. I remember Bobby bought the tickets. I think, if I'm not mistaken, it had something to do with the bar that was in Erie, the Washington Grove. Yeah. I don't know if they organized it or what. And was it Seminary Grounds?
Yeah, one year it was. One year it was real funny. It was the Seminary Grounds. They also had a private grove for it.
But that was big. I mean, yeah. They got to be pretty big the last year when they fell apart.
Mm-hmm. After Mattachine formed in Buffalo, well, that was 1970, they started holding events. Did you ever go to any of those?
To the dances?
Yeah.
Yeah, I went to a couple.
How was that?
That was a little different because at that time, that was being run by Jimmy. I mean, he tried to start the whole thing, the Tiki. was.
Oh yeah.
And that, I remember going to that, and that was like second home to some people. They would go and spend the weekend there. The coffee was free. Just brought your own booze.
Now, where was this? Which there were a few buildings that the
this was a on what used to be the avenue
on Delaware, yeah, downtown Delaware. New City Hall.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And okay. That was the first managing headquarters there.
Uh-huh.
And I was at the first meeting. Bobby drove me.
That was the end of December 1969, when Frank Kameny came from Washington.
Yeah.
God, I was really sorry to miss that meeting. I came in right after that.
And so it was left, I guess it was left to Jimmy and a few other people to try and start a charter in Buffalo. And they were looking for support that night and looking for maybe members. And they did okay. I think they did okay. They started off with a few people, and I don't know what happened after that. I don't remember. I know that they had a dinner. They tried to raise money with a dinner. I remember going to that. I remember going. I think it was a party too that they had at the tiki there. That's vague. That's uh-huh. really vague. But I was one of the first members. I was one of the first members.
Uh-huh.
And you know what the mashing was all about. I didn't know. I didn't know. Until a couple of years later, at that point. And
well, what did you think they were all doing there? Just having dinner?
Well, I knew that the man came down to try and start a club, you know, that had never existed in Buffalo, a club for homosexuals.
Yeah.
I knew that. But, you know, what it wanted to do after that, I didn't know because there was after that, there was a raid. I think there was a raid at the Tiki, mm-hmm. and I used to think that I thought they were trying to you know, put down the club, you know, do something.
Yeah.
Was that it?
Sure.
They didn't want the club to open up. Is that it?
Well, there were a lot of factors involved. That was probably one of them. I think, as I recall it, you know, certainly nobody ever said that, but it seems like that was one of them. Then there was also the fact of the possibility of serving liquor without a license, and you know,
yeah, I was exposed to all that. I mean, I was there. As a matter of fact, I remember one night we left just in time because the raid happened about 15 minutes later. And but I like it seemed so secretive, you know. There were a lot of things that I didn't know, and yet that I knew, and they were happening right before my eyes. And I kind of related it to the club wanting to start, but wasn't sure, you know.
Right. After a while, the Manishing Society moved to a couple of different locations, and then they started having regular dances and things like that.
Up on Main Street here?
Yeah. Did you go to those?
Yeah, I went to those. They were nice. They were inexpensive to get in, and they weren't, you know, dressed the way you wanted. The only thing was sometimes, I think at that, I had pretty much at that time stopped drinking, you know, so that,
uh-huh.
I used to go to dance. I would get up and just dance. It was run okay. There was liquor, there was pop, you know, I think they had beer. The sound system sometimes was pretty shit, you know, pretty bad, but it was okay. Unfortunately, they didn't gather quite a crowd, you know, or even a mixed crowd, because I noticed men and women, they sort of want to avoid each other.
Well, women's dances started happening after that. Did you go to those?
Yeah, just to the women's dances.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And then
was that better? Or worse?
No,
or
no,
different?
That was better. But when it was mixed dances, you know.
Yeah.
It seemed like you always got more males than women. The women tend to not come, you know.
Uh-huh.
It's as if they're hassled by the men.
Uh-huh.
I never had that problem, so.
Right. But you did like the women's dances,
yeah,
where there are
yeah.
women.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Do you think that the gay movement or the women's movement have made any significant changes in the Buffalo community at all? Have they had any impact on your life?
On my life? In an abstract way, I think it's made it easier for me to relate to people, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was never really involved politically with the gay movement or...
Right.
So... Mm-hmm. It's